everybody, and welcome to Horror Film Lovers. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and I'm here with...
Joe Turek. Hey.
And Vittorio Treppo.
All right, and these guys are my friends. I've known Vittorio forever, and we'll actually have another episode at some point with me and Vittorio talking about how we got into horror movies and things like that. And then Joe has been on... countless different podcasts and video casts. You did Indie Film Cafe with me, as well as you did, was it Film Freaks?
Film Freaks, a couple of those.
Couple of those, and then you also did, I think you did one What the Fuck Friday.
Yeah, so, yeah, one of those.
So, yeah, you walked in on Magic Lizard, so that was fun. But, so, basically, this is another podcast done from the Sick Flick Network, so check out the Sick Flick Network on Spreaker. And it is basically a show all about horror, as you know, we are all horror film lovers. We all love horror. So I'm going to have, countless different guests. This is my Virginia show. It's the first episode before I moved to LA. And, this is the last podcast I think I'm doing before I move to LA. So awesome. So, and then I'll be on the road doing different things. I'll get into all that stuff, what's going to happen with me at the end. But before then, we're talking about Larry Cohen's movie, 1985 movie, The Stuff. First of all, I'd have to ask you guys, because I think we talked about it earlier. Were you guys familiar with this movie? Had you seen it? You know, and what were your original thoughts, if you had? I guess Joe first.
I guess it came up to me when we were watching it that I had seen it before, but I didn't recall much about it. During my many years working at Blockbuster back in the day, there was a lot of stuff, no pun intended, there on the shelves. So I was always watching something, and I think I saw it probably a good 20 some years ago, maybe even longer than that. But first inclination was it's from the 80s, but it had. Not just a horror, but had a comedic element, which we'll get into, I guess, in a little bit.
All right.
But yeah.
Definitely. What about you, Vittorio?
I remember watching it when I was a kid. I had rented, I think I used to go up to Maryland, and they had an Errol's video, was up the street from
Errol's.
My aunt's house, and I remember renting it there. And I remember seeing it once, but I had vague recollections. I did remember that Garrett Morris was in it.
Yeah, he was wonderful. And we'll go into the characters and what who they were and things, you know, stuff of that nature. There's going to be a lot of... I feel like that movie's going to have a lot of us saying stuff.
A lot of puns.
Yeah, a lot of puns with the word stuff in it.
Intended and not intended, I'm sure.
I bet mostly intended. But yeah, so first of all... this was a, 1985 film, I want to say 1985, yeah. So around the same time as Back to the Future, and it had a lot of the same kind of, you mentioned Ghostbusters before, right? And it did feel like Ghostbusters in a way, like not the same, but stuff, Stay Puft Marshmallow
Man.
Yeah,
the ooze and all that, yeah.
Yeah, and then also had a lot of the same, elements of, the stuff being practical effects,
yeah.
And everything. All the characters were, there's obviously no CGI, you know. And I'm glad, I hope they never remake this movie, honestly, because, I mean, they could. You know what I mean? It's one of those movies that I wouldn't be surprised if they remade it. However, I just feel like it would lose its feeling, you know what I mean?
It's mojo.
Right. It definitely... it would lose its goo.
Yeah. Well, now that they're in second version of remakes, I wouldn't be surprised if somewhere down the way this was remade, but...
I hope not. But then again, somebody in Hollywood might be listening. Uh-oh.
So, I think they could maybe remake it with a different sort of... I think they'd have to maybe... I could see them doing some kind of a Starbucks-type parody. This is... Well, this... The thing, too, that a lot of people have to realize, around this time was when, you know, I was reading that Larry Cohen wanted to do a parody on consumerism and stuff. But the one thing that you have to remember, back in that time was when... also when yogurt was just becoming a big craze.
Oh, that's right. Wasn't... Mid-80s?
Mid-80s. Soft serve yogurt was becoming a big craze. Wow. And that was, you know, like a lot of people remember TCBY and the various yogurt things. Because mm-hmm. for forever you had like Baskin Robbins and ice cream. And then all of a sudden you started having the yogurt, which was supposedly better for you and all that stuff. I don't know how
much all that better, stuff. See?
you know, all the stuff that was better for you and supposedly. But that was like TCBY was huge back around that time.
I remember TCBY. I don't ever know if I ever. I probably had it. You know, it was like a, you know, it was like the yogurt, right?
They had other chains, but TCBY was like the chain.
Right. Wow. Oh man, I remember that. Wasn't there stores like Baskin Robbins kind of thing that had TCBYs or
They had this one thing that was like. For a while, there was a chain of sub stores called Blimpy, and then they sort of like merged. So you had these stores that were like this bizarre
sub
homunculus of like sub shop and yogurt shop,
sub and yogurt shop.
Interesting.
Get your sub and yogurt on. You know, that's...
here's your 12-inch ham. Do you want some yogurt on that, sir? That would have been kind of cool, a little soft serve on
it. Take Dairy Queen out, I guess, with that.
Yeah, well, no, but Dairy Queen does do, well, they don't do subs, but they do, you know, do other like sandwiches and stuff
like that. Yeah, like the chili hot dogs.
And yeah, so they do food as well, sort of.
Gosh, you went back further than I was even thinking with the yogurt. I was, the earliest reference that I could think of yogurt outside of, now this movie's a little bit before that, would be that Seinfeld episode in the early 90s that... where they had the yogurt where they thought they were it was all diet, but in actuality they started doing a study, and it all crossed up with Giuliani and the re-election campaign and all this stuff. But there was a yogurt that seemed to have the entire New York City possessed at the time.
I will be the first to admit I have never seen an episode of Seinfeld.
What?
Wow. I've never seen an episode of Seinfeld.
You need to get on Hulu or whatever.
I'm on Hulu. It's... I have no real urge to watch Seinfeld.
Wow. It still holds up today.
I'm sure it does.
But I mean, for each person, there's different shows. Like for me, I mean, people look at me, it's like, you've never seen an episode or a full episode of Big Bang Theory. So I'm like,
I've never seen an episode of Big Bang Theory.
And I know Jonathan really likes that show. So but there's shows like that for each person.
I know.
But that episode of Seinfeld really just holds with me. I mean, that just caught me watching this.
Just so you all know, I've seen both of those shows
in
and
their
I
entirety.
Love them. Yeah. Well, yeah, I think I don't know if I've seen every episode of Seinfeld. I'm pretty sure I have, but I'm pretty sure I've seen every episode of Big Bang Theory, but it, like the first season may have been something I skipped or something like that.
And what I've seen of Big Bang, actually I've enjoyed. I've seen like pieces of episodes, but I've never just sat down and watched it in its entirety. And I know that I can really be up for, what is it, 10, 12 seasons of it or something like that that it ran. Right. So there's a lot of content there.
Well, I was actually talking to if we're going to be on this subject real quick of TV shows or whatever, somebody saw my Supernatural shirt the other day and was like telling me that he was just catching up on Supernatural. And I said, oh, yeah, you know, what season are you on? And he goes, 8. And I go, you got 7 more seasons to go, bro.
he's hit the midway point, maybe.
Yeah, that's where I start. I started at 7.
Wow.
You know, well, I mean, when they were at 7, I started at 1.
I didn't realize that show lasted 15 seasons.
It's still going.
Still going.
I mean, that's on its 15th and last final season.
Are they still doing, what, 22 episodes a season?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I mean, I can imagine that, like, they probably... Even though they work together all the time, they probably hate each other. Because, like, you work together with somebody so long, you know, you probably get sick of each other after a little bit.
That's some serious content there.
Yeah.
All right, well, back to the stuff. So let's talk a little bit about the story of this awesome movie. We all really, really liked it, by the way. Like, this is not... See, Horror Film Lovers is different than some of my other podcasts where we talk about stinky movies. I wanted good movies. I wanted good horror films. Ones that I really, really enjoyed. And since I'm the main guy of the show, I can pick, you know. Maybe occasionally I'll let others pick, you know, if they want to watch something or they suggest something. Or if you out there listening want to suggest something to me and think, like, there's something on Shudder or something on Hulu or just something on Amazon that you think is you know, decent as a horror film and you would like to see it reviewed, or if you'd like to see a, you know, one of your movies reviewed, I'll do that on Indie Film Cafe. So bring that up to Indie Film Cafe and we'll definitely review that. But for horror film lovers, we want to do more mainstream films and more, I mean, this is a cult movie. This isn't really a mainstream film. I don't think everybody knows of the stuff, you know. But it is on Amazon, so if you guys want to go check it out. If you have not seen it, I don't know why you're listening to this podcast, but...
haven't seen it, just go watch it, and you don't want any spoilers, go watch it now.
All right. And then pick up at this point, and then we could talk about
it. Exactly, because we're about to spoil the shit out of the movie. All right, so...
Don't eat the spoiled stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And so, speaking of which, so that's how it all begins in this movie. With the guy, I don't know, he was a construction worker or something, right?
Yeah, they were like in Alaska or something, I believe it. He said something, they're out in the field or something.
Yeah, and he goes up and he looks down and he sees this stuff on the ground that surrounded by snow. Right.
It's almost like the thing in the original, you know, the John Carpenter one, and of course the original one takes place in the Antarctic too, but they're in this Antarctic outpost and they see this thing on the ground and he starts eating it and he's like, by golly, it's delicious.
Right. He starts eating it and like, who does that? Like, seriously, if I saw something, he saw it moving on the ground.
Yeah, moving or bubbling in the ground. Why would you want to put that in your mouth? Or even touch it, for that matter.
Like, I could tell you stories, but that's for another podcast.
Hey, look, yellow snow is not appropriate, okay? And the person even says, like, are you eating snow? And he's like, this is not snow, eat it. He's like putting it up to the guy's face and telling him to eat it. It was the weirdest thing I've ever seen. Like, who does that, you know? But I guess they do it for the movie, because in the movie, he does that. He says, you know, check out this stuff. You know, gives it to the guy. The guy eats it, and he's like, "Wow, this is good." And maybe we got enough that we can actually market this. You know, and voila! Then all of a sudden, it's all over. I guess all over the place. At least in this one small town.
Yeah.
But like, it's everywhere, and they have commercials for it, and you know, and it's marketed as the stuff, and which. Would you want to eat something called the stuff? I mean,
I guess it's one of those things. It's like once you might not really want to, but it's like if you hear so many good things about it or people, and then you just try it. And then I guess the part of the story is you get hooked on it. So
right.
It all takes is one little sampling of it and you're done.
Well, there's so many little things about you, so many little inroads you can, you know, it seems like just a simple horror movie, but you know, there's so many little things about it that you can look back on, because it ties in with a bunch of stuff. Like one of the main characters is an ad lady who basically sold the stuff to the consumers, and she, you know, part of it is like having a product, and B, that A, if it doesn't, generally you have to make it taste, product has to taste reasonably well.
Right.
You know, if it tastes awful, I mean, you can sell awful to a certain extent, but, you know, you have to make it taste good. But B, you have to make it presentable. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to sell the product. You have to say, like, this is, you know, this clock radio is the greatest clock radio you will ever own. You know, it's an amazing clock radio, and, you know, if you sell it well, 20 million units later, hey, you've made a profit.
Exactly. And the other thing with that is, like, they did have, like, I guess a good marketing thing with enough is enough, you know, or enough is never enough.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, they did a good job with that. And that was probably that ad lady who came up with that stuff. That stuff. God, man. I don't know how many times we've said stuff in this, like, podcast already, you know? And most of the time we're not making puns. We're just saying the word.
I would not be surprised if when Larry Cohen and his people were trying to think up of the title of the movie, they were thinking about this and just thinking, it's like, well, what can we say? It's like quick, easy, and catchy. You know, because you want something, you know, when you go to see a movie, a lot of times, not as much, but sometimes you'll see a movie that has just like a boring title or whatnot. And then this one, just the title just hits you in many different ways. The stuff. What is it? You know, who's in it? You know, like, what's it about?
Right. What is it about?
You know, at the very least, you'll be thinking about it and, you know, you're going to try to, I guarantee you, you will try to find something out about it, mm-hmm. which is pretty much like advertising 101.
And that's what I was saying before we started this today, but that I was scrolling through Amazon on my own, and my wife and I, we came across it, and we were just like, the stuff. What is that? And it pulled me in. So, I mean, to your point about the marketing and stuff like that, it hit.
Uh-huh.
And that had me intrigued by it. And then I was asked if we'd sit and watch it. And then I realized that I had seen it, but I didn't really remember a whole lot about it. So it was almost like a new viewing in a way.
Yeah, I mean, it was a brand new viewing for me. Like, I had never seen it. I'd always seen the cover at, because I used to work at Movie Scene. So you worked at Blockbuster. I worked at Movie Scene.
And he visited Errol's all the time. So
you visited Errol's.
There we have the triangle of them.
And you visited also. You visited the other ones too, as well, because you used to go to Movie Scene.
I used to go all over the place.
Yeah.
So. And I did Video Update for a little while too.
Did you do Narrow?
I've seen movies there a number of times, but
oh, okay.
They had the big video store there too.
I think that just went out of business.
It did back in August.
Yeah.
Wow. So, but anyway, for people who are not from Virginia, you have no idea what we're talking about. But that was the beauty is where I'm moving to. There's actually a video rental store, and I'm really excited to go actually be able to walk into a place and rent something.
Yeah, instead of just going to a machine or
yeah, I mean, Redbox are okay, but yeah.
But actually talking movies with people and stuff like that, having that, looking at covers, there's something special and unique about that.
Dude, I wouldn't mind getting a job there, honestly. Like, it would just be like feeling like I'm a throwback to my old days.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, doing that stuff. So, you know, whatever. But so anyway, to go back to the story of the stuff, is that basically, and it so they discover this stuff, they put it out, and then there's he works for the FBI, right? The Mo guy, he works for the FBI, right?
I think he was thrown out of the FBI.
Yeah, he was thrown out of the FBI.
Okay, he was thrown out of the FBI. I missed that part, but so he's thrown out of the FBI, and he's basically investigating this stuff.
He's like a hired gun sort of type of thing.
Right. And so he's investigating the stuff. And
at first, I think, from what I gathered, he was hired by these other guys. I guess they wanted to make their version of the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't know the ingredients. So I'm guessing they wanted basically an industrial sabotage. You know, basically so that he could find out how it was made, bring it back to them, and then they could make their own version of this stuff.
Yeah, the ripoff, the whole consumer ripping off one thing for another, and that fit really into the 80s thing, and I think that's the whole parody satire stuff.
They even mentioned New Coke, you know, because Coke keeps their formula proprietary. So
I think that the New Coke was right in that vicinity too, and that
it was just around the same time
in the mid 80s.
So there you go. I mean, there was so much going on with that, like especially with consumerism, that I think that's what Larry wanted to kind of, I'm saying Larry like he's my friend or something, like I knew him forever, like Larry, my buddy Larry Cohen, who, I mean, he did an amazing job just kind of putting this whole story, this whole satire together. And then basically when he discovers what's going on, he's got to stop it, and the stuff has kind of overtaken the town, and you don't know who's been victim of the stuff. And we were talking about, it's like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. You have no idea who's overtaken by the stuff or who's like not, you know.
Yeah.
And so most of the time you can bet that they are. Like there's a scene with the cop, and I was like, that guy's, you know, obviously is overtaken by the stuff, but they didn't know.
Yeah. The only thing is that I think is kind of weird about this, though, is you never quite get an explanation of what the stuff is. You know, as opposed to, I mean, even at least with the thing, they kind of tell you, okay, it's something from outer space. It's like a sentient being from outer space that is trying to multiply and survive and all that stuff. But with the stuff, you just, That's the only drawback I can see with this movie, is you never find out exactly what this stuff is.
Well, at the end of the movie, they do say it's alien. Okay. You know?
Was it alien? Or
yeah, sex? They said alien. Yeah. Aside from that, at the end of the thing, they do mention it was an alien that was... and then he said something about it's coming out from under the ground, you know, mm-hmm. on the ground, which is where they found it the first time.
Yeah, it was bubbling up.
So it was bubbling from the ground. So they said it was all over the place, and you didn't know where it was going to come next. And that, I think, back in the 80s, that would probably terrify people into thinking, oh my God, this could be something that you could find, you know what I mean, mm-hmm. out in your yard or something.
And I think that really starts to hit on really kind of the horror element of the story. I mean, we've been talking about how stuff is like the consumerism angles and some of the parodies of other horror stuff, The Thing and stuff like that. But the true horror of it started to show when some of the things transitioned from the stuff inside of them and all, including the scene where where Mo talks with Danny Aiello's character, who's in there, which was great seeing him in one of his earlier an earlier role of his
Vickers.
How that affected him and his dog was quite interesting, and there was brief touches of some graphic horror elements in there that really would satisfy the horror fans.
So don't give, tale of don't give your dog ice cream.
There you go. Yeah, that's
true. You know what I mean? Like, because, you know, that the dog was just like, I want more, you know? And I thought it was funny that character's name was Mo because he wanted more.
Yeah.
But he's the one who wants less. He doesn't want any
of
it.
Pretty much, yeah. Because,
you know?
Yeah, he's trying to stop everyone else from getting Mo.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of irony of like his character and everything, maybe a little bit. But yeah, no, it was, I thought Vickers did, Danny Aiello did a great job in that one scene. I was kind of bummed that he wasn't in more of it. Yeah. Mo of it.
Yeah. We've talked about a few of the other characters, and especially with Mo. There was also the kid when you were going to talk about the story and his introduction and how his family sort of is a little bit, he's sort of at odds with his family over it, over the stuff, because he literally sees it move in the refrigerator, and he's actually the smart one, if you will, compared to his parents and compared to his older brother, who are sort of taken in and already obsessed or taken over zombie-like, if you will, from the stuff. So that was interesting.
He discovers it. He finds out what's going on. He tells them, don't eat it. And they're like, it tastes great. I don't know what you're talking about. And so later, you see him at the grocery store, and he's tearing all of them down, just trying to destroy them all, because he knows something is going on. He doesn't know what this stuff is. Nobody knows what it is, but people know it tastes great, and then makes you zombie-like. The only problem I see with it is, with the horror aspect of it all, was, I mean, other than they taking their lives over, nothing really happens to them, though. They just become zombie-like, right?
Well, they if you notice, like, when they get shot or whatever, they are, like, punched in the face, their bodies are just these hollowed-out husks.
Right.
Like, you know, they're just, their skeletons are all gone. It's just, like, they're just, like, they're hollowed out.
Yeah.
So it's maybe that is another analogy to consumerism. You know, they just become hollowed-out people.
True. I mean, and that goes with the zombie-like thing, too, is, you know what I mean? Like, everybody is brain dead, trying to get whatever's next, the next best thing. And you know what is great about this movie is, like, that's still today, you know? It's probably even more so today. This movie, once again, this movie could be remade, and it would work, you know? Except I think they would want to do it where the characters maybe get fatter or something, you know, or whatever. Like, that's what I would do. If I wanted to change it a little bit, I would make sure that the characters got more obese because, like, and lazy, you know, or whatever. Just not want to do anything but eat this stuff, you know, and everything.
When they were doing it, with it fitting in the 80s, because, I mean, the 80s was about excess and obviously mindless advertising, if you will, and that the whole advertising campaign was sort of a little side thing in the story, and with some of the cameos they had in that. And love seeing Clara Peller in that one sequence from the old Wendy's commercial, commercial sequences and stuff. And I think that's where there's a lot more to this movie than just being a horror movie. I mean, sometimes horror movies, when it hits on a more personal level, that makes even better. And I think that's why me personally enjoyed it even more.
So she was the Where's the Beef lady?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there was what's the other guy's name that was in it?
Abe Vigoda.
Abe Vigoda was in there.
Yeah.
Abe Vigoda.
There was a couple others that was in there too. I'm not familiar with their work, but I believe they've been in other stuff as well.
Patrick Dempsey had a cameo.
Really?
He was underground stuff buyer number 2. Eric Bogosian was the supermarket.
So was that right at the end? That must have been Patrick Dempsey at the end.
I guess, yeah.
Wow.
Then Mira Sorvino was a factory worker. We were talking about her earlier.
Well, because yeah,
her father was the colonel.
Very anti-Russian.
Very, oh my God. And he, like, at first I thought there was going to be a racist issue because he was yelling, he was like looking at Garrett Morris really badly. And Garrett Morris played this awesome, was he supposed to be, you said Famous Andy?
He was obviously a parody of the Famous Amos guy.
Famous Amos.
Who was a line of, who's nicknamed Famous Amos, who ran a chocolate chip cookie company back in the 80s. And
I still see those cookies in the store.
They're still out there. But I know he did run across some hard times, and you know, it's one of these rags to riches to rags to back to somewhat riches or whatever. But that was it was very funny to see Garrett.
And he was not the Kentucky Colonel, as he aptly said.
Yeah.
And I like, Chocolate Chip Charlie. He was actually my favorite character the whole thing, because like, in the first scene you see him, he like karate chops, you know, or whatever, like tries to attack poor Bo. And you kind of feel bad a little bit for both of them, you know, like that, or not at least for Mo, because Mo's getting attacked for no reason except he's trying to help the place, but he thinks he's taken over by the stuff, you know, so they're both trying to talk to each other about this and help each other out. And then later on he runs into the colonel. The colonel thinks there's something wrong about this guy. And I was like, oh no, is it going to become like a racist thing? Like, is he yelling at him because he's black, you know? And it wasn't. The colonel saw something in Chocolate Chip Charlie that nobody else saw. And later we realized that Chocolate Chip Charlie was, you know, overtaken by the stuff, you know?
Yeah, so maybe he did. So the colonel really did have something else going. Maybe he really could see something.
Maybe. That's what I was thinking when I was watching it. Once he turned, I actually thought to myself, like, did he actually, like, call that? Like, did he know something was wrong with Chocolate Chip Charlie?
You mentioned something interesting there. I think this might be a good topic to talk about, is when the transition when they turn, when Garrett Morris turned, or when stuff happened with the dog, or and a couple times when they turn, it's like they sort of, and stuff started oozing out of their mouth, and you saw their whole mouth open wide, and it sort of rotted from the inside out. Very fitting for horror,
right?
The horror elements of it and all, and I found that interesting. There wasn't a whole lot of that in this, but when it was there, it was really jarring.
It wasn't gory, but it was like disgusting, you know, like I don't know, like the special effects and makeup on this was just brutal, you know.
Yeah.
What did you think, Vittoria? Did you like that?
The special effects were really good. I really liked the specifically the Garrett Morris in the radio station at the end. Mm-hmm. I thought the head masks that they used for him were really good.
Oh yeah, because they open his mouth up really wide. And
it looked very Lovecraftian. It really did.
It was so gross. And they did a great job with that. Like, I mean, for a movie that is a horror film, but is more also comedy aspect to it, after a while you forget it's a horror movie, you know, because it goes on, it handles so many different genres and one like thing. It's like comedy, then horror, then action, then horror, then comedy, you know? Like, it does all these different things one by one, and then all of a sudden you're kind of, you'll be thinking laughing, and you won't be thinking, and then all of a sudden something, like, kind of gross happens, and you're like, oh my goodness. I don't think nowadays people would be scared of this movie, you know? But maybe back in the 80s they would have been. Yeah. What do you think?
I think they might have been scared more so then. Nowadays stuff, so you expect so much. You expect what you expect with special effects and everything. It's kind of mutated down almost that we're sort of drained out in society from, we've seen everything pretty much.
Right.
So seeing something back then made it more impactful, if you will.
Yeah, definitely. You got any opinions on that, Vittorio?
No. Pretty much same thing.
I was going to say, I thought you were looking, you were pondering about it or something for a second. Yeah, no, I agree, because I think that these days, I feel like we have seen so many original movies that nowadays it's really hard to, like, make something original stand out like that. I mean, the last movie that, like, really kind of creeped me out a little bit was, like, The Babadook.
That was a bit out there.
All right, and it was original and different and creepy, but like it still reminded me of other movies, you know, that have been done. But it did it effectively. I don't think anything else has really made me, unsettled or you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like these days, so horror has kind of more gone on to jump scares and some comedy in order to make it interesting. And this was pretty creepy, like, for a 80s horror flick, you know? But, all right, so Mo was played by Michael Moriarty, is that how you say his name? And Andrea Marchiovi, or wait, Markovici. That's a hard name to say.
Let me see if I can pronounce that,
that name?
Andrea Markovici.
Markovici, okay. Garrett Morris played Chocolate Chip Charlie. Paul Sorvino played Colonel Malcolm Spears. Scott Bloom played Jason. And you also said his brother was in Call of Duty and a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, his brother's actually more famous now for stuff, but he had a small role in this one. But yeah, he played his brother, but not the main character, Jason, which... I think they probably named him that as sort of an homage to Friday the 13th, but...
You say that. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Maybe it was just truly unique. I mean, they just... we'll call him Jason and leave it at that.
Yeah. Danny Aiello played Vickers, which we talked about earlier. Patrick O'Neill played Fletcher. And let's see. Who was the other one that I really liked? I liked the family. I liked the father... the brother and the mother. I thought they did a wonderful job.
Very interesting scene that happened with when Jason's running away from his family and he gets in the car with a stranger that he's never met before.
Yeah.
Kind of like how dire his situation must have been to get in a car with a complete stranger than his family, who's, I mean, been there supposedly all his life, obviously it turned on him. But I mean, I guess Mo did give him a line about saying, I've seen it move as well. So that's immediately impactful in the situation, I guess, that makes him beyond being a stranger.
And it was like another flashback to the 80s. It was kind of like during the whole, like, don't talk to strangers period.
Right.
Where you have, like, you know, people talking to strangers, whatever.
Yeah, and then getting abducted and everything. And this guy just helped him out. I mean... who knows? He could have been had this stuff, you know. And that's the one thing I was thinking about when he got in the car was like, who knows? This guy might be like, you know what I mean? Like, how does this kid not know if trust this guy? Like, he just literally just saw him for the first time. So, but yeah. So there you go. Of the characters, who was your favorite character from this movie?
I would probably lean towards Mo, but Jason, being that I would have been about his age at that time, Jason kind of could, I could relate to how he would be seeing the world, if you will. Not necessarily how the family and everybody could turn on him and stuff, but I'd say it'd be between one of those two. I could see elements of both of them. Most sort of just, he's going to do things his way. He's going to go after whatever. He's going to go after, take the check, punch the guy in the face on the
punch
boat.
Punch the guy in the face.
And he's like, he broke his jaw, or whatever he said to him there. But then again, with Jason being 12 years old or so about that time, that would have, I would have probably fit with, I could relate to what he was doing with, it looked like it was like Star Wars sheets almost that he had going on for Return of the Jedi with on the bed and everything like
he
that.
There was one point in the bathroom he had a Motley Crue poster
on
the wall.
Yeah, exactly, the Shout of the Devil stuff. So, I mean, it's just interesting seeing it from that perspective. That's where I would probably associate probably a little bit more so towards.
Okay, but, what about you, Victoria?
Favorite character? I did like Garrett Morris. I kind of wish that we'd seen more of him. He kind of just popped up and then disappeared.
Right.
For most of the movie. Like I said, I did like the kid was good. The thing that I think about is kind of weird is that I think that, I don't know if there was like a, even though Michael Moriarty was kind of like the main guy, I don't feel like there was like a clear cut main character.
Right.
It didn't, it felt like, that's another thing that's kind of, I mean, I get they do it through multiple things, but I think they kind of were on the fence as to do it more from like the kid's point of view and from Michael Moriarty's point of view. And right. They couldn't really, I mean, they did a good job balancing it out, but at the same time, I don't think that there was a very clear-cut protagonist. You know, I don't think that they, you know, they may have made it a little bit too muddled, but it still worked out pretty well.
Yeah, no, I agree, because it's an ensemble movie, you know, right? It's got a bunch of big-name actors together, right? And it's almost like, you know, when the Westerns and the war movies, they put a lot of those, you know, mm-hmm. like this is a horror version of that, which I thought was kind of cool. They have like these big names people in these, you know, roles, and like the people that are the main people, obviously the Michael and what was her name? Nicole. They were kind of one thing. They were like, you know, there's that relationship and that everything. Then there was Jason's character is kind of like the kid point of view of everything and all that. So they did try to do both and kind of try to do like different storylines that help. I also agree that I love Garrett Morris and was kind of bummed out that he was only in it for like, you know, not even half the movie and that they didn't take him with them. I mean, honestly, he felt like Ernie Hudson in Ghostbusters. Like, they just had him there because to be the token black guy.
Yeah.
And
well, I think they had to send him to D.C. to talk to the FBI or something or do something. But it did take away from him just disappearing. Maybe he was only contracted for a short time on the role or something like that. They didn't want to keep him that big into the movie.
Well, they also wanted the turn where he saw a familiar person there. Mm-hmm. And then they, you know, which... You know, you're right. He was supposed to be with the FBI in Washington, and he was still there.
Yeah.
That should have rang red flags up, like, wait, you've been here the whole time? Like, are you one of them? You know, because that's probably what ended up happening, was he probably got attacked and got changed and, you know, had to eat the stuff and became the thing. Oh, my God. Answered the stuff and the thing in the same sentence.
Well, I think tying that into some of those 80s films with the thing, you mentioned that, the Blob. I think
the Blob.
Body Snatchers was mentioned. You guys talked about with the pods and all. Another one that's crossed up a little bit with me, maybe not this other movie I'm thinking of, horror movie, was more about one person trying to take out his anger on the world, was, and it's a very maligned film, I know you love it, but Halloween 3.
Where
in that one you try to take over, it was one guy trying to take over the world and get revenge on everybody. This was sort of a unknown entity doing it, but it came out in that same couple year vicinity, and it's just sort of a body snatcher taking over bodies or hurting or killing bodies in bulk.
Halloween 3 is a very underrated movie.
Well, actually, yeah. Vittorio was the one who showed me Halloween 3 for the first time years ago. A couple years ago, I think, only, you know.
So this is a podcast with the three of us. It's like probably couldn't get many rooms of three people together that quickly, all three being on the same page with it. Because to me, I really enjoy Halloween 3 in a different way. It's so with removed from Halloween, the Michael Myers sense, but it's very enjoyable in its own sense. It fits the 80s
perfectly. At the same time, it also fits into what Carpenter actually wanted for Halloween, which was kind of like different directors doing their own different little takes on not really Michael Myers per se, but just different Halloween stories.
Yeah, scary elements from, Halloween 3, the score in that movie too. But anyways, I know that's a whole different movie when we're talking about here, but fits right in with the whole 80s element.
And that'll probably be one of my horror film lovers movies. I'm probably around Halloween. I'll do like Halloween 3 or one of the not as popular Halloween movies, because like, you know, that movie was the one that like tried to be different and tried to stand out as this, you know, we're not going to do Michael Myers again. We're going to do something different. And it was great. It was wonderful. And, it felt like, you know, a different, sort of different movie, you know, and everything. And it fit really well with it. But this movie, and perhaps is very much similar in the same sense as this small town overrun by, except that there's not a there's not like this big boss that's doing it, except for just the aliens themselves that are. And that's another thing, is like, you look at this stuff, like, what, like, is it an alien being, is it you know, you can't really tell, like, does it have a master, you know? Like, it's just this big blob thing that just comes over and, you know, takes over. Like, I mean, that, you know what I mean?
Well, part of me would like to have an explanation to that, but there's also a thing. In the 80s, there was an emptiness. There was a very hollow, superficial element to society. And I think that not having that, I could see where that angle could come from. I could see both sides of that. Because, I mean, the person me wanting to know what caused it is always there, but I could see it fits kind of that time period to not have that fully explained.
Yeah, definitely. So let's talk a little bit about, I guess we talked a little bit about the special effects and stuff earlier, but, I mean, as for the whole, what did you guys think of the special effects?
Very good.
Yeah, I liked how it, like, the stuff would creep out of the body and then sort of like it would go in a beeline out of the building or something like that. A couple times it went up out the window, and then the couple times where it was chasing the kid, if you will, in the truck, or when they were in the I don't know what they were in when they were in those tubs, and it was taking over the room, and they were trying to get out of the room with the tubs, and it was just sort of sliding over the tubs to get them, the metal tubs. As well as in the hotel room, the hotel sequence was pretty impactful when it came out of the pillow.
Well, I was reading that they used a couple different, you know, things in this. You know, some they used Haagen-Dazs. You know, there are some sequences like in the when they're in the tanker truck, you could tell that it was, I guess, like, I don't know if it was termed forced perspective, where it looks like you can tell it's kind of like a background thing. You know, sometimes shaving cream will work, you know.
Speaking of shaving cream, they had that one scene with the kid eating the shaving cream.
Yeah, he
and I'm wondering if they use like marshmallow fluff.
I'm sure they probably did.
Yeah, that would make more sense. I mean, I just love that scene. The scene was so great. He's like, oh, I'm enjoying this stuff. And then guy eats it or whatever. He's like, this isn't the stuff. Ah, and they go after him like, That was a really funny scene.
I can only imagine having a bulk of like Barbasol or something like that. Because a couple times I shaved, I might have had like a little touch of it hit the side. And I'm like, ugh. Nah. But I guess it better to have that than to be taken over by a mind-numbing entity.
Right. I would rather eat shaving cream than get my my mind controlled by some stuff. Hollowed in stuff. I totally agree. So okay, how about the cinematography? The guy that did it, I recognized his name. I thought it looked really good. It looked like half the movie looked like a war movie, you know, when they got to the soldiers.
Yeah.
And stuff. Yeah. It looked like a war movie. So, hold on one second, everybody. And we're back. Sorry about that. Had a little bit of technical difficulty. So we were talking about the cinematography, and Paul Glickman did it. He's the guy that worked a lot with Larry Cohen on a couple of things, especially like Perfect Strangers and I think a couple other little projects. And then after that, there's a movie called Special Effects, I think, that Larry did. And then he went on. He didn't really do that much cinematography after that. I guess this movie kind of, you know.
Well, or in this one, it was photographed by.
It was photographed by, not even little, cinematography by.
A little different way to give them credit.
I think, didn't they say that on like on Taxi Driver? You know, like the camera guy for Taxi Driver was photographed by.
Well, that could be an interesting different way of doing it, but yeah.
I think so, because I think like a lot of times, like the if a movie is done like an artsy kind of thing. Mm-hmm. This movie, I don't know if necessarily it's an artsy thing, but it did look really, really good. Like, I was...
Well, I liked how they did a couple of the shots with the... this was something very 70s and 80s feel. When they showed up, when they were in the top of the building, the business building or whatever, they did that zoom in, to the top level of the outside.
Right.
It just felt like how some of the 70s and 80s feel. It just the cuts with that and all. It just seemed, I don't know.
You were impressed by the cinematography, right, Vittorio?
It was good.
Yeah. It was definitely very well done. And I mean, I think pretty much the direction was done very well. The writing was wonderful. The characters, the actors, you know, they were top notch. There was nothing wrong with this movie, right? If you guys had to rate this movie, what would you guys rate it?
Oh, what kind of scale?
Like a scale 1 to 5. 5 being the best and 1 being the worst.
I'd give it maybe a 4.
A 4? What would you say?
Maybe up to a 4. Possibly 3.5, but yeah, between 3.5 and 4, somewhere in that vicinity.
I'd say 4.5.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I was very impressed. We were talking a little earlier about this, but... I was very, you know, kind of impressed by the movie itself as being a film that I had not really heard much about and still, like, freaking blew my mind as far as, you know, this would be something I'd watch more than once, you know? I mean, I don't know if I'd watch it, like, every year, you know what I mean? But it'd be something that, like, if somebody's like, hey, let's watch this stuff, I'd be like, sure. Like, your wife doesn't like horror, so you know, much, right?
Yeah, I don't know if it'd be one that she would get into, but sometimes she sort of gets subjected to some of these. They just, she's in there and she sees it on and she sort of stays with it.
Do you think she'd actually be into this one?
I think she would be until a couple of the graphic scenes when it shows the heads. I think that might sort of turn her away a little bit, but she might make it through it.
Yeah,
she gets some good laughs out of the 80s stuff, though, to be honest, and a lot of the commentary on that. She'd really appreciate that.
So yeah, so when I move, I'm going to be staying with a girl who's into horror, so this would be something I think she would enjoy too. Like, I think she will end up not, I don't know if she'll be like a constant, actually she might end up being a constant guest on the show, because we'll be staying together, so a lot of times we might just be like, hey, let's watch a movie and do a podcast. Isn't that, like, you know, that almost sounds like a dinner and a movie, but dinner and a podcast, or podcast, movie and a podcast.
There you go. She might have some recommendations on some horror films, too, so.
Yeah, which, like I said, I am down for more recommendations. If somebody is into something, and they think that this movie is something that they would want to see, I'm down with it. So if you have a film that you recommend and you think the horror film lovers would enjoy it, recommend that to me. I think it's horrorfilmlovers@gmail.com so that you guys can email.
And I think when looking for recommendations, I think this movie is a good example of it. It doesn't have to be just graphic horror in a serious horror sense. It could have comedic elements to it. Or, I mean, they come in many shapes and sizes. And, I mean, sometimes they don't even have to be graphic at all. It could all be mental horror. I mean, there's a lot of great horror stuff out there. So always looking for good recommendations.
Right. So I guess to go right into, like, what's going to happen with this show. So a big thing that, I mean, I have no idea. You know, I'm not going to lie. I have no idea what's to come. It's not all planned out, which might turn some people off into, you know, wanting to listen to the show. But I kind of like that. I like being kind of like us doing the ratings. I think I might end up having us do 1 to 5 ratings because I did it for the, the show. When I have Paul on for the video cast version, we do ratings 1 to 5. So I think, so you said 4, right? You said 4. Yes. You said 4?
I'm leaning between 3.5 and 4, so I'd probably have to say 3.5, but yeah.
3.5, and I'd say 4.5.
So 4 average.
Yeah, 4 average, which that's pretty good.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty good movie. Like, I would say if you are in the mood for something that's just sort of, you know, sort of silly, kind of fun, doesn't really make you think that much. Like, it's not meant it that way. It's supposed to be more, you know.
That's the one where I disagree. I think he does a pretty good pair send up of 80s consumer culture.
But it does make you think. You think?
Yeah. I think this is one that maybe weeks and weeks or so from now I might want to revisit my rating because it is something that could potentially have one. Because some movies, it's just, oh, you watch it, you're done, and it's just sort of out of mind. But this, I lived that time period as a child growing up, and I can see how that could make me want to think about it a little bit more. But I can see both sides of that for this one.
All right, no. Well, there you go. I'm surprised, because I just thought, like, it's one of those movies where it was fun and sort of entertaining, and it's not something like, well, maybe it makes you think a little bit about how we as a culture, you know, let consumerism kind of overtake us, you know, and, you know, with certain people, certain things, certain addictions, you know, kind of all of a sudden that becomes our only source of our life, you know, and it consumes us.
And I think that takes it into how it's gotten sort of a cult following. I think that's probably why, because it's had a sort of a lasting impact on those who's watched it. But I like this. Ask me that question again in maybe a month or two, and I'd like to see how I feel about it then.
Well, we'll bring it up in a post on the Horror Film Lovers Facebook page, which you can visit. We also have a I'm trying to figure out what it is on Twitter, because and I don't think we have an Instagram yet. I am really bad with Instagram. They don't, like, Twitter lets you have, like, every single one of your, you know, your connections, one of your pages. They let them all connected. Instagram only lets you have, like, 6, or no, not 6, like, 5 accounts attached and everything, which, I mean, that's understandable, but then you have to log out of one, and, you know what I mean? It's like an old ordeal just to get them, so... So for Horror Film Lovers, it is Horror Film LVRS. So if you want to add us on Twitter, add us on there. You can add me on Jonathan Moody on Twitter. Are you on Twitter as well, Joe?
Yeah, I'll have to put it on the tag on this podcast.
Okay, because you don't know it offhand.
I don't know it offhand.
See, that's the problem with Twitter, is you got to figure out what, like, actually fits. And I was so lucky that I got Jonathan Moody, because this one guy wanted Jonathan Moody, another Jonathan Moody. And he wrote me, and he was like mad that I got to be Jonathan Moody before him. And I was like, well, you know, I mean, I was there on Twitter before. You lose. I know, you snooze, you lose. Victoria, I don't think you're on Twitter, are you?
I am.
You are? Did you want to give your handle or no?
Sure. my name is VG Treppo.
VG Treppo?
Yes.
All right. What is yours, Joe? You got it pulled
actually,
up.
It's under Joseph Turek, and it's at Ryche Rider. RycheRyder.
What was that?
A group that I grew up loving, Queensryche, hard rock group.
Oh, Queensryche.
Yeah.
And, Operation Mindcrime.
There you go. Best album in my mind, one of the best albums ever. So Queensryche, and a big Winona Ryder fan growing up in the 80s and 90s. So just put the two together, had to get something unique, and there you go.
There you go. And, wow. Yeah. That almost sounds like its own band.
Yeah. Yeah. Ryche Rider.
Ryche Rider.
Yep. And yeah. So
there you go.
There's my Twitter.
Cool.
Maybe the next version of Queensryche can have Winona Ryder as the lead singer.
Oh, that would be interesting. If she could hold a tune at all, that would be very interesting.
Winona Ryder singing Jet City Woman.
Yeah, I think I would have to. I'd probably have to be front row on that one.
Yeah, you would definitely get like VIP tickets and all that fun stuff, backstage passes and all that. And so like I also said, like this show is going to be done in LA. I'm moving out there, so this is the last episode on last podcast period here in Virginia. So that's crazy. It's weird to think. I'm really excited. Can't wait to move there and see what happens. Like I said, there might be two guests. There might be or like you guys, or there might just be one guest in me. I guess there's no real thing yet. It's not going to be like Indie Film Cafe where we do the review and then we add up all the things and we say which one's the best or the worst or whatever. We're not going to do that. It's just, we're just having fun with this and enjoying the fact that we're all horror film lovers. We all love horror films. I'm pretty sure you both do. And I think, Vittoria, you're more of an old school horror film lover, you know, like 80s and some 90s, but like, I think you don't like the more newer stuff as much.
No, I never got into Scream. I never really got into that.
Like Blair Witch.
Never saw Blair Witch.
See, we keep finding out new things he's never seen. It's almost, you know.
I watched a lot of foreign horror.
Really?
Stuff
like Ringu.
Not so much Ringo,
like
Anatomy
and stuff like that.
What?
Remember, like Anatomy?
Anatomy. That was a great movie.
Yeah.
With Franca Potente. Yeah. I think that was like her first movie after Run Lola Run.
Yes. Well, Run Lola, not a horror film, but Run Lola Run's a great film.
Yeah. And so there's that. I remember I went through a big Takashi Miike fan phase. Back
you
in
you
the
show
game.
Me Happiness of the Katakuris when I.
Yeah.
Brought that over once, and I have you ever seen that movie?
No, I haven't.
Oh my god, they have a scene where a sumo wrestler is having sex with this underage girl, and then he dies, like has a heart attack, and he collapses on her and kills
That's
her.
That's what I was thinking that was going. Oh no.
You should never be on top, you know, like I don't even know why he was, but he,
if you are above a certain weight limit, like you should not be on top.
You're right. especially with a little girl like that, like what is wrong with you?
Speaking of horror, huh?
I mean, no, that movie was like, and that's another movie I think could, I don't know if Takashi Miike would want it, would want it done, you know, like I don't know if he would want it remade or anything, but that's a movie that could get remade because it's something that America would be, you know, like it's about a bed and breakfast where people just end up keep dying and, you know, like accidental deaths or whatever. And
you know, I was just thinking, here's a question. Has there ever been a case where a director has remade their own movie?
Yes. Alfred Hitchcock.
Okay.
The Man Who Knew Too Much. So okay. At least I know that one for a fact.
Okay.
I don't know if any.
I think there's a couple foreign films that got remade American with big budgets, not necessarily horror. But,
yeah, but I'm kind of thinking with like the original director decides to, you know, go back later on and be like, hey, I want to, because I know that they've done a bunch. Like I know that Christopher Nolan, that movie Christopher Nolan did with Robin Williams.
Oh, Insomnia?
Insomnia. That was a remake of a Swedish movie.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, there's a few other European films that got remade, I think by the same directors as well in America. I just can't think of them off the top of my head, but yeah.
So if you guys know ones that have been remade by the certain directors, especially horror, like, you would think, like, a lot of horror filmmakers would want to redo their films, but a lot of them never touched anything. Like, I mean, Halloween was remade by Rob Zombie, and then the next one called Halloween was really Halloween 2, but, you know, or whatever, with David Gordon Green. But and then Halloween Kills is coming up. Oh my goodness!
Isn't there two of them that they make?
Yeah, Halloween Kills and Halloween Ends.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is just.
I know we have different opinions on the Halloween sequel, but. Well, speaking of horror, you were asking him about horror stuff. What really were your love of horror? Which time period or genre of horror section of horror really is what gets.
Well, see, here's the thing. I grew up in a different time period than you both, right? Mm-hmm. So I grew up with Scream, you know, mm-hmm. right? And that was the movie that got me back into horror because at that time, I wasn't watching horror films and everything. So Scream was it, you know, mm-hmm. was the movie that got me back into horror. So I will always love Scream, and mm-hmm. I Know What You Did Last Summer and The Faculty and all the Kevin Williamson stuff that came out around that time. Even Teaching Mrs. Tingle, which a lot of people don't like, I thought was wonderful. Mm-hmm. You know,
and see, for me, it's like the 70s and 80s horror films is probably what really entrenched the love into me, and then those ones sort of reestablished it, if you will, and a little bit of because it sort of was reverent towards those, but you know, it took it into a different context as well. So I can appreciate those as well, but living through those earlier ones, it ties both those in. I'm always good for the classic horror, the black and white, the 60s, 30s, 40s, those ones as
Bela
well.
Bela Lugosi,
exactly,
man.
Exactly, yeah. Stuff like that. In present day, there's still some good ones nowadays, but I mean, it's few and far between somewhat, unfortunately, but I'm always up to give something a try.
I used to not like 70s horror. I used to not like it, and because I just found it boring when I was younger, you know, right? And like Texas Chainsaw Massacre took me literally like 3 tries to actually watch it because the beginning of the movie is slow to me. Like
oh,
it
sitting
doesn't
in the van and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Sitting in the van talking and everything. And I wasn't old enough to really appreciate what they were doing, what they were talking about, what was going on mm-hmm. in that time period. Years later, I watched it and I was mm-hmm. like, this is actually just a wonderful Night of the Living Dead. I hated that movie mm-hmm. for the longest time.
Well, the, one thing is very under, I don't know if it's underappreciated, but 70s were some great time for horror on TV, especially like you know. First of all, you had going back to the 60s, you had Dark Shadows, mm-hmm. which was went on for a long time. I just watched a documentary on called I think House of Dark Shadows.
Yeah,
it was about the Dan Curtis, the guy who created.
I think it was called Master of
Dark Shadows.
Yeah, Master of Dark Shadows.
And it basically goes on about his. You know, most of the thing. My only complaint is it didn't talk so much. It talked a lot about Dark Shadows, but not so much about his post-Dark Shadows stuff, which I think was, you know, in a lot of ways, he actually thought it was his post-Dark Shadows was like his best stuff.
Maybe they'll do a sequel to the documentary.
But, well, like most of the people on there are dead, so. Yeah. But it was really good. Like he did Cold Shack the Night Stalker, which is just one of the best things of horror around. He also did Burnt Offerings with Oliver Reed and Karen Allen, which is a great, great movie. He also did a Dracula with Jack Palance, which I haven't seen yet, but I've heard it's very good.
Yeah, I think a lot of the 70s and going back to 60s too, the 70s horror, there's a very, I'll say, grimy element to it, very raw senses about it, to where it transitions to the 80s. The slasher stuff really took off a bit more in the 80s, but very different from nowadays. And nowadays, it's very glossed up horror, if you will,
right.
in a lot of them. And I think there's some elements of that, I mean, like the Jordan Peele stuff. Nowadays, I mean, those really are really good. It's a different way of looking at horror and stuff like that. And I know there's some interesting.
It is very glossed out. Like there was this movie made back I think late 70s, early 80s, Town That's Dreaded Sundown.
Oh, absolutely great.
And they actually did a new version of it a couple years ago, which was I don't know if you saw mm-hmm. that. But it was, well, first of all, it looks a lot fancier, but they mm-hmm. kind of, it was interesting how they redid it as kind of like a meta kind of like movie within, yeah, not really movie.
Yeah, because it was like it was the events, it really happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So and they treated it like, you know, it's like they would have people like advertising and it's like, oh, this is the drive-in where all the people are killed or whatever. But right. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, and that's, I think a lot of times that's what people do these days to keep it fresh and interesting is kind of make more meta stuff and make people more aware of that this is a movie about movies that, you know, were a big deal back then. Well, I just want to say thank you guys so much for the show. Like, this was awesome. And you guys are the first guests on my show, so... good way to start out. This will most likely, the plan is to release this on January 1st. So happy New Year, everybody. Welcome to 2020, even though that's the future, you know. So if you guys are listening to it now, it should be January 1st, 2020. And so now I have to definitely make sure it's there at that time. All right. And thank you guys. This has been awesome. I hope... is there anything last, like, words that you guys want to kind of say about horror films or about this show?
Just keep watching. Just keep listening. Have fun in 2020 and keep watching.
I'd say, yeah, stay interested in the horror films. I know sometimes it can be, there's highs and lows, but I think it's like that with everything in life. And just... when you seek out and you find greatness in anything, horror specifically for the context of this show, definitely share it, because everybody's looking for a good horror film that's interested in this, and I know I am. I'm always looking for the next great horror film to see.
Definitely. I think that this is going to be a fun idea for the show. Like I said, I was telling these guys earlier, I've got like a list of movies already kind of for the whole year, and this is only going to be once a month, so there's only going to be like 12 episodes. However, if you guys have something that you guys want me to do, I will bump stuff off if it's a really good suggestion. Also, we may be doing at some point doing a Patreon for this show, so in order to give back to people, you guys can give $1 and then you guys can make suggestions, you know, and stuff, and I will do it. Like, if anybody pays $1, anybody can make a freaking suggestion, you know, so just letting you guys know.
Yeah. Well, this is a good experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Hope you guys all have a wonderful new year and new decade and new everything.
That's right, new decade, too.
Yeah, it's a whole new decade. You see, people don't have to just say, see you next year. They can say, see you next year and see you next decade. So I guess that's where I'm going to leave you guys with. And say thank you guys so much once again. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram, not Instagram, gosh, Facebook, and as well as YouTube. And look out possibly having a Patreon. Don't know yet if that's happening. But and check out all these guys. I'll leave their links to their show, to their Twitters and stuff they like on the bottom. And hope you enjoyed it. And I guess see you guys. Bye.